committee on judiciary, Tuesday, May 27th, 8 a.m., room 407A. Work session. Have you got a set of the amendments?
Madam Chairman, I do not. I'm sorry. I came prepared for 2 meetings. This is the third. I just didn't quite know how to get ready for this. I've Madam Chairman, what I've done is prepared for amendments to mark May 21, 1975. They are basically designed.
Can you
get
2 seconds?
I know they've also been worked over with John, I assume. But they're basically designed to take care of the Oregon constitutional provision which provides that families that the prison system is based on principles of rehabilitation, not on vindictive justice. And because of that, I tried to set up a scheme which basically does this. First of all, it requires that after hearing on sentencing in situations where the individual is subject to being sentenced to life imprisonment without benefit of parole, that the court make an affirmative finding that the court investigate whether or not the defendant at that point is capable of being rehabilitated, and if it concludes that he is not capable at that time of being rehabilitated, it make affirmative findings to that effect. Now that means then that those findings are as reviewable as everything else that happens to the defendant during the course of his trial. So that gives him an immediate appeal on that, and that's part of the adjudication as well. Now in addition to that, I then tried to provide for a scheme in which every 2 years, and I provided every 3, the defendant may, by means of the state habeas corpus act, they bring a petition for writ of habeas corpus which raises the question of whether or not his condition as one who is not subject to rehabilitation has altered. And the sole question before the court at that time, and it would be a court here in Marion County, it would not be the final court, would be, is this defendant a person whose circumstances have now changed so that he is rehabilitatable, if that's a word, and he can be made eligible for parole. And that doesn't mean he gets parole, doesn't mean the court can give him parole, since it means the parole board can now consider him for parole the way they consider anybody else. And the bill essentially provides for an every 3-year review of that status. You've heard testimony to the fact that if a person is once put away and told he's an animal and he can't be changed forever, then that's made an animal out of him even if he wasn't before. But as long as he's got a hope, as long as he's got a chance of renewal if it changes, then it may well be that this team would serve a lot better. That's the basic approach that's been taken.
What do you do about the court docket problem? Turnover would be the total amount, I suppose. Maybe not. But in other words, you've got a whole mass of people coming in every 3 years.
No, you've almost none. You have to keep in mind that, first of all, this sentence, life imprisonment without benefit of parole, can only be imposed for murder, and will rarely be imposed. And so you're talking about very few people who have this mission court. Very few.
It's only a life sentence.
Yes, sir.
And only
now that's only murder. Well, that's the only life sentence we've got lying around right now is murder.
What happened to our...
Now, that's a policy decision that I submit you may want to make. You might want to consider client based felonies too. You heard testimony to the effect that some of them are a problem. I'm not sure you ought to do that. It seems to me that at least in terms of what you're trying to accomplish, murder may be as far as you better go.
What was life that on a system?
Murder.
Life?
Yeah, that was on.
Well. This scheme is all right. I just wonder if you suggest, are we getting down far enough?
If we were to go down further, where would you land next?
Well, that's the part I don't like. it seems to me that anything I do after that gets frightfully arbitrary. Class A felonies would be my answer. To do anything else would be to pick and choose between Class A felonies. I certainly wouldn't talk about B or C, but I'd have to talk about all Class A, which is supposed to involve imminent danger to life or property anyway.
All Class A?
All Class A. And I'm not sure I feel very comfortable with that. But that's at least, you know, that's extortion and kidnapping and rape and armed robbery and so on.
If I understand this correctly, it's not every murder, or is it? It's only those that the court finds at the conclusion of the hearing, the court concludes the defendant is not capable of being rehabilitated. So if we did include Class A, another who comes up in our own mind when we talk about murder, those few that we can think of in recent times are probably the fifth category, based on what I know of the case. But I'd be inclined to think that even if we did pick up those Class A felonies, it wouldn't be exercised very often.
Well, quite frankly, I'm not satisfied on that point. For instance, a fourth-time rape offender may be, you know, be more likely to get it than a murder offender. Remember that if you revise the murder statute the way it's also proposed in this bill and in a companion measure as well, murder will consist of one of only two things, either an intentional killing, and what amounts to the old premeditated murder situation, or a felony murder, and under our new felony murder rule, which means you knew the guy had the gun, you were essentially willing to use it, and so on, so that amounts to an intentional killing, too. Murder becomes very limited, a very limited set of circumstances.
Well, if
you
didn't, I'd want to go to court day, at least.
You did create a court version, I think, frankly, if you go to my day. I'm not for it or again, and I just felt obligated to raise the policy question.
How do you create the burden? Simply because the court would bear more Class A felony, and the court would have to have a finding that he is or is not capable of rehabilitation.
Two kinds of burdens. One is the court has to hold a hearing, and that's a burden. That hearing may turn out to be longer than the proceeding by which he was adjudicated guilty. And then secondly, you've got the every 3 years thing, which puts an enormous burden on the Marion County trial bench. Which may have more appeal since
I've already done that.
Some others.
Yes, we're suffering under that burden already.
Now, the reason I put this in habeas corpus rather than post conviction is that if you pass a bill which permits habeas corpus hearing, that's a penitentiary. It means It means these cases can be heard in the penitentiary, and these characters don't even have to come outside the walls in order to have a hearing. And I think there's something to be said for using that procedure with people who've been identified in this manner. There's one other thing, and that is that Section 8B of the bill at page 3 of the amendment, the Corrections Division may establish and maintain a separate unit or facility for persons convicted of murder and sentenced under Section 4 of this Act. Now, the only reason that's there is to establish that the Corrections Division can, not that it must, but that it can, separate these individuals from the rest of the prison population subject to the general requirement that they can't subject them to such rigorous special incarcerated treatment that it becomes a violation of the Constitution, cruel or inhuman. You may well not even want to do this, because it might very well be that to authorize that means that you segregated it enough that you significantly increase the possibility they're going to regard themselves as being treated as animals. That again, the policy judge.
And then Robert. Mick, will an attorney be afforded these people that during each of their 3 year appearances? Public defender or who?
I'm trying to recall what the situation is now. It seems to me in habeas corpus they have privately appointed counsel in Marion County, but they do get the appointed counsel.
Is Marion County pay for that?
You better believe it. I had a bill on that got laughed out of here. Not out of here, but ways and means, I think. So we have
Marion County pays for it. The real problem lies in the fact that unlike most habeas corpus proceedings, which are pro forma and a joke, these would not be. And the best lawyers in Marion County ought to be handling them.
Some of the best ones, I think, are handling the other ones, but Marion County just picks up the task.
Well,
would it have to be? Maybe this guy would like to have the attorney have him in his first sentence.
Well, I don't think that's practical for several reasons. One is, you don't know where to sentence them. So they're in Malheur County, for instance. So the lawyer comes a long way in preparation, may be very difficult. Almost all the people who are relevant to preparation and determining whether or not the man is subject to rehabilitation are going to be here. The logical thing to do is use a lawyer from Marion County. He has the easiest, most ready access to the relevant material.
Sam,
yeah.
I had one question. Nick, on page 7 of the bill, if you've got it.
Yeah.
It's in the definition of manslaughter in the first degree. It says criminal homicide constitutes manslaughter in the first degree when it is committed intentionally under circumstances not constituting murder.
Right.
Does that that aimed at a person that's under the influence of extreme emotional disturbance?
Yes.
Or is it intended simply more than that?
No, it's aimed at a person under extreme emotional disturbance. I think since the intentional killing not under extreme emotional disturbance is murder, then I think this language takes care of every other intentional killing.
Do you think there's any desirability on restricting the language to that intentionally committed by a person who's under the influence of extreme emotional disturbance?
No. In fact, I think doing it the other way, the way I did it, is a better way to do it. I've established one class of offense, and I said every other intentional killing is the other.
Now, this is an exception, isn't it, to offense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Emotions and your language.
I'm with you.
And then can the new discussion? Let's call roll.
W. Brown?
Aye.
Patterson?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Vance?
Aye.
Manny Salmon?
Aye.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you. One more question.
Yes.
Before you. How many people are involved if you got this kind of
thing? I don't know. The majority of people sentenced to the Oregon State Penitentiary as opposed to the Oregon Correctional Institute are people who are either repeat offenders, significantly repeat offenders, or people who have committed class A felonies. So what's the population out there now?
500.
It's about 500 people. I'd have to assume for an estimate that we're talking about 200 to 250 people, at least.
I don't know,
but I can find out for you.
You don't want to try to pick and choose between class A felonies. There's no in-between.
If you tell me to do it, I'll bring you a proposal. But I don't think whatever I do, you'll like it, because it's going to be just arbitrary, just plain, flat arbitrary. I can try.
It opens up the constitutional account, doesn't it?
Yeah, it creates a very definite equal protection question. Unless I've missed something in the class A, which really makes some of them different than others, I don't think I have. I remember the scheme was to treat all particular kinds of crime the same. I can take a quick look and advise.
The thing that bothers me was that, frankly, you know, the more dangerous kinds of people, then what we're getting at, in my opinion, are the armed robbers, fourth-time offenders, and the four-time rapists. I think they're more dangerous to society than is the convicted murderer.
Well, I guess it's because I was never in service, so I'll volunteer to go through the list of Class A, try to try list the committee by tomorrow.
Opinion,
if the chair is at all inclined to at least see the list, and I can let you know what we're talking about.
What's the next budget do you want to?
We're getting into a real can of worms, son.
Well, I'm sure that's true.
Constitutionally, I'm sure you may be.
I've always been there.
I know.
Unconstitutional.
Yeah, the court, Mick Lee's is the best question. The use of the root of habeas corpus for this particular question, it seems to be that's unusual, but.
It is. The state of habeas corpus in general is unusual, particularly in Oregon. So there's nothing. Labeling of habeas corpus is simply.
It's going to remedy.
Yeah. What I've done is I put it there because of some limitations on where the hearings are held. I could have used post conviction relief the same way. You can call it whatever you wish. Habeas corpus happens to have that nice convenient hearing will be held in the penitentiary room. Or, God willing, here we'll have that rule.
No, the house willing.
yeah, you're right. Playing the two is a mistake.
Is there
a
motion
and
a bill?
I'll move the bill.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor
Cooper?
Aye.
Clerk Conroe?
No.
Carson?
250.
Carson? Aye. Roberts? Aye, but I'm not sure
how
I'll vote on this one. Well, we tried
that, aye, but they
say
I'm
not sure. Aye.
Let's
look at 827, that's Norm Howard's bill.
Adam Cameron, you should have in your packet House Bill 2925, which is what the committee put into House Bill 827.
827?
Yeah, so in your packet, you should have a copy of House Bill 2925, which the committee voted to.
Well, we don't have 827 in our book. Well, anyway, what 827 is that Norm Howard bill, and we passed the bill out, but we didn't really do what Norm Howard wanted. He wanted to have an expunction once every 10 years, isn't that right, John?
Right.
And we didn't do that. We provided for one in 10 years.
And his point was he wanted one every 10 years.
Yeah.
So, well, you want to do anything or not?
Well, you want to bring it back? I just can bring it back if you can put one in every year. That way we can be sure and sell it.
I don't care. This fact situation was in what? A woman in 51 had a shoplifting and in 70 had a shoplifting.
Where is it going out?
It's out of the community.
It's going to death.
No, I. Is it down there?
I don't think
so.
It's
not
going
out. After 10 years, if she was in good conduct after, for 10 years after that second offense, then she could make it. After this release, it would wipe out both. Of course, it's a one time situation. But she does have some release.
I
know
we reached through the bell, but
everybody
wants to do it
later.
We can put it.
Paul Rome.
W.
Brown.
Hi.
Tyson.
Hi.
Robert.
Hi.
Smith.
Hi.
Patty Kim.
Hi. If we move the one expansion every 10 years, does that be terrible time? Can you fix your name?
How's it going to operate? I'm sorry, I keep losing track of where we are on expansion.
If you look in your packet, there should be a copy of House Bill 2925.
Okay.
When the committee voted Senate Bill 827 out, it in effect got it 827 and put in the provisions of this House bill. I think that you could provide for what Senator Howard wants by just amending on page 3, lines 8 and 9, put in the same new language that appears up in lines 3 and 4. So it would read a person who, deleted previously, but a person who had a conviction set aside pursuant to this section during the 10-year period immediately preceding the filing of this motion pursuant to subsection 1 of this section.
Okay, well, let's take an example of how it operates. I'm convicted in 1970 and 1974 of two misdemeanors. Okay, I want to give them a response. If I committed just one being a misdemeanor, I could have walked in and done the response. Okay, but now I got two before I move, okay? 70 to 74. What do I have to do now?
In 84.
And in 84, you're going to both wipe off. And if I have 8 ahead of 1974...
You go with 10 years from now.
But if I can go 10 years, no matter what my criminal record is, I can get it.
I don't think so. I think you're going to have to wait 10 years after. I can amend this bill to provide that. But say if the amendment is simply to put that new language on line 9 there, you're only going to be able to get one expunction every 10 years. So even though you... first meet the requirement that you haven't been convicted during the 10-year period immediately preceding. Even if you meet that.
So if it's 20 years.
It's going to be a long time.
It's 20 years to get rid of the 1970 and the 1974. So the gal that Rick talked about, Jefferson talked about, I have another one very similar to that. She'd have to wait 20 years. She'd get one shot, she'd wipe out the 1971 and 84, and in 94 she'd wipe out the 1970. Well, I think it's important to think that. That's why I asked the question, whether you wipe out, I could see a guy being an 8-time loser as long as he didn't go over a Class 2 felony and go 10 years and wipe it all out.
This would apply, or it would say that you either would not be convicted or have an expunction within the 10 years preceding. So you're going to have to wait quite a long time before you can come in for your second expunction.
I don't think that does what Norm wants.
I'll move the amendment Norm wants, okay?
Whatever it is.
John, can you write that?
Yeah.
What, now Norm, does he want that? If I misstated what he wants, does he want his gal to wait 20 years to get those two wraps to expunge?
His gal, no. I don't know when to expunge the first conviction. Frankly, but no, she probably doesn't.
Well, if she'd already expunged it, well, because she can wait 3 years and expunge the first one.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if she had a commission of a Class C felony or below, had it waited 3 years, had it expunged, and then got another crime, now this would take care of it. Oh, she has to wait 10 years.
Well, I thought you could only expunge her first conviction if she had never been behind
it. Well, that's what. Yeah, if she hasn't, but if she sneaks in between the two convictions and gets the first one expunged, then under Norm's bill, she'd wait 10 years and get the second one expunged.
Yeah, she has to go longer after the first one before she gets expunged.
But if she gets two wraps before and doesn't have an intervening expunction, in other words, they're closer together than 3 years, she's got a 20-year shot before she can
Well, I don't think it's intended for her to wait 20 years, it's too. I think it's 10 years. Whatever it is, one function within a span of 10 years period, and we're simply facing any conviction within that period the same as in function. So it's talking about the longest they're going to have to wait is 10 years.
But if you have two crimes that you want to expunge, it's not the 10 years per crime.
No. Well, yeah, that's the case. It's going to cost you, first of all, you cannot have committed a crime within the 10 years immediately preceding the motion to expunge.
Right. And you get one crime per motion.
Yeah.
So, and you get one expunction for 10 years.
Well, that's, we could amend it to do that. Yeah, right now you have only one expunction period.
That's a bill too.
As the existing law stands.
Well, doesn't this?
And as this particular bill is currently printed. You see, lines 8 and 9 on page.
Oh, I see, but you put the Norm Howard Amendment.
Yeah, if you put the Norm Howard Amendment.
Then you either crime or expunction every 10 years.
Yeah.
So if you have five crimes, you could wipe it out in 5 50 years.
Yeah.
Is there any objection to the amendment? The amendment's adopted. Is there a motion on the bill?
Please go back out.
Go back out to pass and amend it. Put follow up.
Yes. Duffy Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Mayor.
No.
Madam
Chairman. Aye.
For the record, Madam Chairman, I'm going to have to take a look at the amendments and have John go over the time factors with him next year. I understand it. I don't want to commit myself on the floor on this 40 carry. Oh, no. No. I think the floor is getting tired of my double shot carrying bill. So, yeah, any other questions before I turn it over?
Oh, 857 was sent up here, the short claims act, and the issue was the review by the emergency board. Lee has prepared amendments which would have the review by the Department of Veterans and General Services and a copy to the governor and a copy to the emergency board.
I wish someone would explain to me, but the way the means people believe that this is, well, this would come in would be after settlement.
They review the settlement as I understand it.
Well, that's what I wanted to clarify.
Madam Chairman, on the amendment presented by Attorney General Johnson provide that prior to the settlement, first of all, they provide that the settlement must be approved by the Director of the Department of General Services, but it also provides that prior to the making of the settlement, the AG has to advise the Joint Ways and Means Committee of the Legislature's in session or the E-Board, if it's not in session.
What if they disapprove? I mean, does he just send a letter? Is it one way he just has to say we're doing it?
I would think that that language implicitly gives the legislature or the E-Board the power to disapprove of that.
Oh my God.
I don't think so. I thought the decision of the Director of the Department of General Services was to be final.
Yeah.
And simply, he was then to advise the emergency board of what he had done.
That's money, huh?
How many claims do you have in a binding?
I can tell you what the Ways and Means Committee want. They want final authority. Right. If it gets out of line, they want to be able to say, no, we haven't got $250,000. We got $15,000.
Right.
Now that's what they want to do.
Right. Isn't going to work that way.
Well, Lee said he had only a couple of settlements that went over $5,000. I think he said he had one that went near 100,000, but it was a handful. It was over 5,000.
But one of the problems I had when we were arguing, there was no unanimity. It was a judge advocate jury situation with the Ways and Means Committee, and no appeal process at all.
But you can always go to court when you're making a settlement. You're doing a negotiation.
But who do you take?
If Ways and Means refuses to accept General Services settlement that they have agreed upon, then the claimant has no recourse except to go to court.
friends.
And say, all right, so we tried to settle a thing, and so now we're going to try to jury decide.
Now, they're not going to settle for more than $50,000, are they? That's our limit.
Yeah, where's the time to
go? I see nothing.
The bottom, 132.
Madam Chairman, my problem is I just can't think of it. I won't.
No, it's just the Attorney General shall advise the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Okay.
Well, in the amendment, the Director of General Services makes the agreement.
Madam Chairman, I'll spare the committee my emergency board seat, but for holy Christmas, if, in fact, the emergency board has no authority to do anything, we ought to get them a subscription to Statesman or someplace or to something and let them do it that way. I don't see any need to have Attorney General advise them. And I think
we ought to buy them all robes and let them
sit
there. And
they have no function in this thing, in my view, or should not have any, other than changing the court claims act if it doesn't work.
Well, the problem, Madam Chairman, let me give you the picture that they're concerned about, because I understand what the point is. They're worried that an administrator of state government will fold up and make a decision, an agreement on a tort, which is completely out of line and may be arbitrary, for a wild amount of money, $50,000 at the limit, and that no one in the budget-making process has any chance for review to see if that is reasonable, see if that is justified. It's a question between an agency department head and a court.
It is only not a department head, it's the director of the Department of General Services under the amendment.
But my point, even with that, I don't think the function of settling and tort claims is based on the fact one can do the budget. I don't think Ways and Means ought to decide if it's a fair settlement based on whether they'd appropriated the money ahead of time.
But somebody ought to question the Department of
Commerce. On what, though? On what I'm saying is, if the 15 of them decide that there really wasn't a tort committed, then I would agree with Betty. Then we ought to send this back to Ways and Means to have a courtroom built in and have Rome decided to be checked.
Really, in reality, doesn't the agency who is representing the state, the deputy, make the settlement? In reality. And my point is that neither the emergency board nor the head of the Department of General Services has had experience in litigating or trying to make settlements. All right, so what we're talking about then is simply a recommendation by the attorney that handled the case to the head of the Department of General Services, who then, before he can do anything, has to go to the emergency board, which seems to me to be an additional step. If we're going to have the AG representing the state, and he simply has negotiated this thing and done it out of many years' experience of working on tort claims, that the Department of General Services ought to just take the recommendation and turn it into the emergency board and have him pay it.
Right.
Well,
but that's what I read the amendments as doing. And it's simply advisory to the Ways and Means, so they know what the fiscal situation is.
I'm looking to approve down line 29.
Does the person agreed to have an opportunity to appeal?
That's the amendment.
No. Of course, we've taken the Ways and Means out of it. They can't stop it.
Okay.
His no-go is decided by the Attorney General whether to settle the claim or not settle the claim. And that's where he is now anyway.
But he could take it to court still.
Yes.
Is there any provision for the state to take the question to court?
Mm-hmm. If the Attorney General decides that he's going to settle out, and the state doesn't, somebody else in the state doesn't want to?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, if there's no settlement, there is.
Well, it has to be approved by the Department of General Services.
Yeah.
Under the defendant. So the defendant wouldn't take it to court. The plaintiff has to take it to court.
I mean, the appeal.
But what Bob,
well, you
I think
appeal
thinking
from
that, let's suppose
the state can't.
The Attorney General is too magnanimous and didn't pay, and somebody in the state is Ways and Means or state says that that's too high a settlement.
Right.
What choice do they have? And that is none.
Right. But we've got the Attorney General and the Department of General Services making this decision.
Yeah. I think that's a risk I'm generally going to have to run, because I think adding the Ways and Means Committee or the Emergency Board, the second guess, and lean over the shoulder of the AG and see whether that was a good settlement.
Well, I think that's a senior responsible
people. Yeah.
Is a tort all under a class action?
No. Not unless you have multiple court cases.
Well, that's what it is. No, multiple court cases.
Yeah. Or multiple is on a highway.
No, sure. No, you still can't do that.
If you have a group of highway users.
You cannot combine plaintiffs and court cases because each one is injured in a different way.
Well, if they're injured in a different way, yeah. We do have joint requirements.
Well, if one has a broken neck and one's got a broken toe, they are injured in a different way.
Well, they all got poison at highway jobs.
I think it would be very difficult to do it. I think it might be possible that it would be very difficult to do that. Military would figure out a way. Yeah. <laughs> Well, don't we have this backstopped up, though, that they're still paying out of the budget and ways and means to appropriate $100,000 in slush funds to the Attorney General to pay claims, and once he's paid out those claims, he's got to come back to the emergency board to get additional funds. Isn't that the way it would work? He doesn't have unlimited. He just has to get all that.
You can't dip into the general fund.
Yeah, you're getting $5.
Yeah.
I hope they don't, but they could. I think that's, am I guessing right? I think that's the control.
I don't think he's giving anything. He's trying to negotiate it.
Yeah, I don't.
It's a liability.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to argue by the way he needs to make that point.
They can establish what his kitty for settlement is going to be, reasonably. Mm-hmm. And if he sees that, he's going to have to come in and justify his
And if they don't give him money?
Then we ain't going to settle no more.
You can't negotiate with it.
So it's closed, do me. And I hope he gets it in writing from Ways and Means, so that our emergency board, so 2 years later when we have 35 foot lanes stacked up and everybody goes to the limit, Ways and Means can share that with us. But I think that's the recourse that Ways and Means have. And I think that's a proper recourse. I think that's a budget-making we've got next to.
What about those other 15 guys?
Okay.
Well, why did we go from 25 to 50,000?
It's 25 to
50,000. Oh, there's 7. Well, I think we brought property up to personal injury, didn't we? Personal injury used to be 50.
It's a larger number for this one.
Oh, then we went to 100,000 for personal injury.
Okay.
Can I have John, our clerk, claims act expert, tell us about line 17, 18, 19, and 20 as used in this section, and our court include any violations and so on.
I didn't have a chance to see exactly what that section was, but I believe it's probably equal status relating to equal rights.
Okay. Or a comparable federal legislation enacted under. Now, I have a prospective concern.
Oh, it's a civil right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It seems to me that, I question whether it's necessary. But if in fact it is necessary, wouldn't it be better to state it out front and say, and cite an existing statute rather than citing comparable federal legislation?
Well, I further drag it on the case if you find it.
Well, I don't mind him citing USC 1983. As the basis of helping us determine what tort is, but I guess I don't know what that means, so I guess I don't. But or a comparable federal legislation. What is comparable federal legislation? And does it mean is it only those that have been enacted at the date of the passage of this bill, or is it future?
So strike that phrase.
Well, I certainly would.
Motion is to strike or of comparable federal legislation. Well, we have to do the rest of it, don't we? It's a period after 1983.
Yeah.
We strike the rest of line 19 and 20. Then the person moves that. Is there any objection to the amendment?
You don't know what that says.
It's civil rights.
Yeah, it's civil rights.
No, I believe it is civil rights.
If there's no objection to the amendment is adopted. Is there a motion on the bill?
Madam Chairman, I just want to call attention of the committee, which is probably already well ahead of me, that this liability fund is set up by the Department of General Services a portion of each agency's contribution. So it means that the Department of General Services is going to have to work with the AG's office and with the Ways and Means Committee to, in fact, provide the fund in the first place. Because each agency under Section 4 is going to be, they're going to have a certain amount in their budget.
I wish it were otherwise, but that doesn't bother me because then the agency says, I'd like to settle with you, but we haven't got the money. And that's not, Ways and Means doesn't participate in that. You know, you have to do it. That's too bad, and maybe next time we'll get a better kitty, but I understand that. But saying we want to settle, but we have to check with Ways and Means is bad. But I think Betty's right. If Ways and Means puts in $3 for settlement, there isn't going to be much settled.
Did you have any more?
And the amount that can be taken out.
There's no control back there from anyone. But from any legislative body, Ways and Means or Nature Board about how much will be allotted each agency or how much there'll be in the restoration fund. That's set by law. It's negative the argument. Negative the point that you were making to dry them up.
Mm-hmm. And you don't think you have to do that because you appropriate the special restoration fund, therefore it becomes a dedicated fund, and
they're all the time.
Assuming there's anything in it.
Well, they're always here.
Well, except it's in the restoration fund, it's going to be called the liability account, so it's only an account, and if we spend it all, there's no more in there. So I see your point, and that is that Ways and Means would have a hard time selling it again if they are emergency board if they want to. Right?
Is there any way to solve this one?
Not without going back and give a review somewhere, some sort. Get them back in the program. Some statement that.
I'm not up on this, but it seems to me that we have two checks on it, the funds available and the budget that we give the agency. So it's a double check. In other words, in a dedicated fund, such as somebody dealing off, the Capital Planning Commission, just talked about it yesterday, the Capital Planning Commission, we do not pass a typical appropriation budget because the funds for the Capital Planning Commission come out of a dedicated fund on the rents and whatever that is, in the general services, wherever the agency pops up so much for rent. So we pass a limitation budget. It's called the budget for the Capital Planning Commission, but it just limits how much they can take out of the dedicated fund. We don't appropriate any money because the money's already there. That's your point. But, so you have a double check. And what I'm concerned about is, I think we still have a check on these agencies, even though this fund is sitting there. I don't think they can take more out of it.
Well,
than
how long
their
is it
budget.
It's Section 4 and Section 5 says that the Department of General Services shall apportion each agency for whatever amount. Any amount of contribution by each agency shall be based on the fact it's risk. And five, those contributions shall go to the state treasurer and be credited to the liability fund. So they are assessed in their budget, and then they take that money out and it goes to the state treasurer and credit the liability fund account in the restoration fund. So in a sense, it's money coming out of the general fund, it is not money, it's in the restoration fund already. Created. And then the monies are continuously appropriated for paying the fund. So it doesn't really touch the restoration fund because they assess these agencies to create this new fund.
And you see that the assessment by the same token is determined by the Department of General Services and
who determines what the risk is in each agency.
And based on the risk. I think you're going to lose the bill, my point, Madam Chairman, unless you take care of this problem. That's the concern I have, and I think we have to pass this bill. So, my only suggestion would be to try to have John try to figure out a way, maybe with Ripper.
Well, how about you talking to me?
All right. Yeah. Who's doing it, Lee's office? Are you doing it yourself?
Can we do it today so we can do it tomorrow? And you're just starting most of the day?
Yeah.
932. It's a child custody bill that came up from another committee.
Oh, that took some time. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Madam Chairman, I frankly don't know if there's any way around the concerns that Senator Powell raised. I know one thing we can take out. I'd like to have somebody, for the background of this bill, I carried this bill on the floor. It came from Human Resources. I was asked, the way I got a hold of it is Rob Frisby talked to me and had some objectionable parts, and I said I wouldn't support it. And I took those parts out pretty much, and then asked if I'd support it, and I said yes, and said we could carry it, and I reluctantly said yes, and I wound up with it. I learned a lesson doing that. But I think the first concern, there are three concerns that I think we can take care of, two concerns that we can take care of. I think that on page 5, line 10, we ought to stop on that. I think that was Senator Roberts' concern, is the preference of the child. We say shall consider the following relevant factors, the preference of the child. May consider the following relevant factors, or drop out the preference of the child, or make it put an age in there of 14 years or higher or something. If you recall, the question was, will this have the effect of making a pawn out of the child even more than the child is otherwise? And I think that's a legitimate concern. So that's one issue. Line 4, I think our chairman has a concern about to give sole consideration. And I think that was your objection, Betty, if I recall correctly. I think we can take out primary consideration. Now, keep in mind that I raised some of these points with the committee, and that committee didn't want it. They wanted sole F in there, and I asked that.
I'm going to take primary.
All right. I'll move primary now.
My point being that I think parents have rights in their children, and I think too many social workers who set tiny bathrooms and bedrooms and put children in where they should be the number of bathrooms and bedrooms rather than family time.
Okay, well, I'll move primary to children.
Is there any objection to the amendment?
I do not follow the immediate versus.
No, we're not on that. Hearing no objection, amendment is not.
Yeah, line 6. What I'm trying to get at, Walt, was that I think Senator Roberts raised a good question, that there are times that the preference of the child should not be made, the court should not be required to consider the preference of the child, either because the age of the child or the circumstances involved. And this does set up, when it gets in the statute, it makes the child an important element in custody.
Why not put it at the discretion of the court?
How about may consider? Okay, I'll move may for shall instead.
Any objection?
Now, we may be driving the Human Resources Committee into direct confrontation with us on the floor, but
what was Powell's argument?
Well, Powell's argument, let's see, well, it's part of Betty's, and that is a part of Senator Brown's argument, and that is that the parents have some rights in this thing, and that the best interest of the child does not always control. There's one other that bothered me was their language on lines 20 through 24 of page 5. In determining custody of a minor child, the court shall consider marital status, income, social environment, or lifestyle of either party's own life, if any of these factors can be shown to be causing a present and actual emotional or physical damage to the child. I tried to get lifestyle out of there, but they didn't want to take it out there. I think lifestyle is. I don't think it helps anyone.
Well, we're going to have may consider these factors A to D, but these are just representative of other factors of the total group.
Mm-hmm.
How about saying may consider among others the following relevant factors? Among others. Put that phrase in.
You mean back up on 6?
Back up on 6. May consider, comma, among others, comma, the following relevant factors.
So what are others? That's what we're trying to do, is tie the court down so that they're not imposing their own moral standards on
them. Well, that's the key to the whole thing, is that
if we get a puritanical judge who says I don't like divorced women, and all the kids go to the male side, yeah, I don't know that they do that. We're trying to speak to the court, and that's dangerous business anyway. It's a risky business.
You say these are the only four factors he may consider.
Well, let's move to what next, you know.
Well, I think I'm out of it right now. I think we can stay with Walter.
Well, I still don't understand how that.
Well, I've lost it, frankly. I talked to him before the session, he talked to me during the session, microphone to microphone, and I talked to him after the session. I don't know that we can resolve it. I think what I'd like to do is tell him what two changes we've made.
But what is it? I'll tell you what I think he suggested. I noticed that he objects to taking off the language on the past conduct and demonstrated moral standards of each of the parties. There's case after case after case in which the father is running around with another woman, yet he gets the kid, or more likely, the woman has another man living in the household where the kids are, and he still gets the kid. And I don't know what John's experience has been, and I don't care what his experience has been. He said on the floor he had experience in it. I would just expect that his objections are taking out of that past conduct and getting full more time.
But we built that back in. The no preference in custody is back in. Line 16, no preference in custody shall be given to the mother or the father, the sole reason that she is the mother. So we put that back in. So it's really lines 10, 11, 12. I think you're right, buddy. I think that's...
So you see, you really took that out and over here say it doesn't matter what the lifestyle of the party is.
Yeah.
So we're just going directly opposite of what this says over here in considering moral standards.
Well, how about if we put in there's no preference till beginning to the mother and deleted the sentence before?
Well, we have that already in.
Yeah, we've already got the no preference. That's
complete. Why don't we put in a sentence in and add a E that the court may consider? And that is the best interest of the child and the past conduct and demonstrated moral standards of each of the parties.
Because that's what the other committee is trying to get out, because they don't want the judge imposing his moral standards. It's not the moral standards of the parties. It's the judge's moral standards that he imposes upon them.
Well, he may or may not consider it in a whole list.
Well, can we walk that fine line in getting back again? I don't think the court is entitled to such as his moral standards for that of the parties either way, but I think he is entitled to judge what's in the best interest of children, and that's where John and I have been very close to disagreeing. I'd be fine if we could work some language to indicate that we could put in the past conduct of the parties, and if it has an effect upon children.
Well, that's what you said down here.
Well, that's what we've tried to say down there in four, that you can look at marital status, income, social environment, or lifestyle.
Only if
these factors can be shown to be causing present or actual emotional or physical damage to the child. Now, maybe the thing we could do is put down to consider past conduct, marital status, income, social environment, only if any of these factors can be shown to be, and then soften, causing present or actual emotional, causing potentially or something detrimental to the welfare of the child.
Just take out actual. Causing emotional or physical damage to the take that present and action.
How'd that be? Past conduct of the parties?
Well, can you pass on that for marital status?
Mm-hmm. Now, this is sure to drive the.
How about this? How about past conduct? Because it might still be continuing. Conduct? Nothing wrong.
Okay. Somebody's waiting on the phone. You can tell me right in a little bit. I'll get back to him soon.
Conduct is better.
Okay, conduct of the parties. Forget about past conduct. Conduct of the parties. Marital status. Income, social environment. Can we take out lifestyle? I don't really care. I thought it dropped flat on the floor, but it didn't. So
social environment, you can take it because you need to
down. Okay, and we take out present and actual.
Are we getting out lifestyle or not? Any objection to putting out lifestyle because it comes in the social environment?
No.
There are no objections. Lifestyle is different. And then it's past conduct before marital status and...
No, we took out past. It's just conduct of the party. Marital status, income, social environment, or lifestyle be the priority?
Okay, conduct of the party, not a status quo, and strike on 23, present and actual.
Right.
Any objections? Amendment to that.
Now, the only other one was the one that Senator Fadley, that I recall, is the one that Senator Fadley said, in the event that neither parent is found to be suitable to have custody of the child, the court may award custody to some other suitable person.
What is that?
That's, I'm sorry, lines 17, 18, 19, I think it. I don't deem that a significant change, but I'm glad that Ed brought that up, because it is a change in the law. Now, as I understand it, they have to go make them ward to the courts and then send them out to the grandparents or to neighbors or sister-in-law or whatever it might be. Ed raised it. It didn't seem to catch any flack. I'm not troubled by that. But it is a power that the court did not have directly before, I guess.
I think the court has taken the power when it has found that it might be damaging to the child to award the child to one.
Well, should we take that out?
I might take it out.
The one thing, however, was the one that Dick was talking about, where the father killed the mother, went to jail, and the court has now given the father in jail custody of the children. And the children go in, and both children, one was very young and one was two or so, and both children watched their father kill their mother in Washington County. And he's very concerned about that, because apparently the court has given the father custody of the children and staying temporarily with the father's parents, and it's pretty well cut off the wife, mother, and others who have an interest in the child.
So they can bring that into juvenile court and take care of it. I can just see the court fixing children all over the place.
Okay. On line 23, the causing, it might not be causing, but it has the potential. Causing, sounds like it's something about what might cause, or might reasonably cause. It could be a situation where there's a bad circumstance to put the child into because of the danger of this, but it's not presently causing.
Causing or may cause.
An objection to, or may cause. That is another way to the case.
Those words of art, you go further top.
And page 5, 9, 7, 18, 19, the chairman just says that they can give it to another person. Because I think they can do it to juvenile court. Is there any objection? The amendment to that. Is there a motion on the
board? How about may cause? Did we put that in?
Yeah, I mean, okay, listen, that reads very well. Yeah, you want to, it was a latitude to make it come out. Yeah, make it, yeah. Motion on the bill. I'll move it out. Senator Carson moves it out. Senator Carson, amended. Clerk Caldwell. Aye. 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 Roberts. Aye. 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 A
Oh, yeah, this is a pretty French bill. So what bill? It's a pretty French bill.
John, are any amendments needed to it?
No, Madam Chairman. The key change has been on page 4, lines 2 through 4. And the rest of the amendments are just conforming to that change.
Is there any motion on the bill?
I'll move the bill to the floor.
Senator Roberts moves 2397-45. Second. Let's call it off.
Evan Brown?
No.
Tyson?
No.
Roberts?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
Well, it's now we need you. Well, 25 miles an hour. Don't call statements, please. Right, restate that on the tape. Please do not call Senator Bailey.
Right there. 2616. Elimination of limitations.
I'll move it out.
Senator Harrison moves it out to the end. Let's call it off.
Symbolic is elimination of limitations.
I have the number right there.
2616.
Dudley Brown?
Aye.
Harrison?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
Well, the Camelot relics are going down. Someone may have to be under the services of Wharton Cup, and I want to go down.
Right there.
Let's see.
That's the number, please.
This is a simple bill about paying court reporters and when and that time. Any amendments?
Madam Chairman, you might consider the difference in language on between line 15 and line 23. Line 15 directs that Linn County shall make the compensation commensurate with the compensation given to other official reporters in the district, being a judicial district. Whereas when you get down to line 23, it requires Benton County to make the salaries commensurate with official reporters in that county, which would restrict it to Benton County, whereas Linn County, as I interpret the thing, would have to take into consideration salaries throughout the judicial district. You may want to make those decisions.
Benton County is a separate judicial district?
They're
no,
both in the
21st. Same judicial. But apparently they both have their own court reporters.
Yeah.
All court reporters.
What would you suggest
for
her name?
Just in the district.
Right.
If you want to make it commensurate with the other reporters in the district, or you can change that first subsection to restrict it to the county. I would think that the intent is to make it commensurate with the other court reporters in the district.
Person moves commensurate with the district. Is there any objection? Amendment adopted. The motion on the bill.
Okay.
Yes. 2016, this pass as amended. Clerk, call roll.
Abby Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye. Yes.
Aye.
Madam
Chairman.
Aye.
3274. Does anybody want to work on
Stan Bunn? It's up tomorrow.
Okay.
I don't. Madam Chairman, could we have up tomorrow that antitrust, the lettered.
Yes.
Yes,
977
or 947
or whatever. Yes. Right. The Domsel Bill, 3274. Does it need any amendments,
Dan? No, Madam Chairman.
The motion?
Madam Chairman, is anybody concerned at all in my crushing battle on the floor about the misuse of the word domicile when they really, this bill's okay, but that rascal we passed,
I told him over there about it.
Okay, because that, I think it's, apart
yeah.
from the rape issue, we really meant residency.
Yeah.
Or residence.
In rape, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't make my point on that one.
Yeah.
But I guess this isn't the bill to do it, although the two of them together are going to, if they don't correct it over in the House, they're going to have the...
Well, I'm advising in the House, we're fine.
What's the reason for this bill? Well, it does end the old theory that the wife's domicile depends upon that of her husband. And it's impossible for a wife, as long as she's married, it's not impossible, but almost impossible, for a wife to establish her own domicile. And modern lifestyles now, I think for tax purposes, for a variety of purposes, inheritance,
you want to remain married, but in separate.
Have a
world.
Yeah. In other words, one could be domiciled in Vancouver and one in Portland. They may reside together.
And the more that women are working, Bob, and having to take, maybe being transferred by their company or that sort of thing, there's maybe a period of time in which they have two domiciles, later they resolve it and have only one again. But there's all sorts of situations that it's necessary for a woman legally to be recognized as having her own domicile.
Appreciate that discussion.
Motion?
I so move.
Discussion? Good call.
W. Brown?
Aye.
Harrison?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Manny Cannon?
Aye. 3275. Change the name. Anything we can hear?
No, Madam Chair.
I'll move this into the court. We got this out. Discussion? Good call.
W. Brown?
Aye.
Harrison?
Aye.
Roberts?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
Bob,
if you would do that,
would you
please?
Yes, Madam Chairman, look.
Okay.